Welcome to Beauty and the Brain with your hosts, Dr. Chris Crowley and nurse practitioner Jerry Drinkard. Get ready to dive into the latest in revolutionary treatments, cutting-edge devices, and wellness secrets. Whether you're a consumer or provider, we're here to empower you at the forefront of beauty and aesthetics.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. And together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, a med spa located in Pace, Florida. And today we're talking about some topics that can be a little bit controversial, I think, in our community because there are lots and lots of this going on around the world, but especially more popular now in the States probably than ever. And that is microblading and permanent makeup.
Yeah, that's something that we deal with in our practice quite a bit. We partnered a little while back. Actually, one of our first rooms that we actually rented in Pensacola was from a permanent makeup artist. We had one room in her business, the permanent makeup clinic, and that's Trinket Parker. So Trinket has been kind of a staple in this industry. She's been a permanent makeup artist now for over two decades. I don't know exactly how long she's been in the business, but a long time. A teacher internationally of these techniques. And so has really been doing this permanent makeup for many, many years. What we've seen is kind of this explosion of a demand for microblading and a perception that it may be better, maybe semi-permanent, easier to remove, easier to correct. And many, many people are now performing this procedure kind of all over the U.S., but especially in our area. And with the increase in use of that, we are also seeing a lot of corrections. And I know you deal with this. You know, they even had you some business cards and stuff made up for a while because you were doing so many corrections of some of this work. So why don't you talk a little about that?
The bye-bye brow daddy?
Yeah.
We see a lot of it. And I think there's a little bit of misconception about permanent makeup versus the microblading. And I'm certainly not an expert in that field, but I think a lot of people choose microblading because it does say semi-permanent. And the perception that a lot of people have is that if they don't like it, at least it's semi-permanent and it goes away. But from what I've seen as a practitioner that's trying to do corrective work on this, is that semi-permanent just means that it doesn't stay in that state permanently, that it changes, but your skin never goes back to the original state and is ink-free. I think that's a little bit of a misconception, and it's not necessarily easier to, from what I've seen, to correct than permanent tattooing. And that's what the permanent makeup is a tattoo just placed in that area.
Kind of a little bit of difference in the technique and the way these are delivered. Again, I'm not an expert either. We work with people who do this and we know the technique somewhat. But my understanding is with microblading, they're using a handheld tool to make these little tiny hair-like strokes in the brow. So in general, this is used a lot for creating more fullness in the brows or thicker appearing eyebrow. And they're using these little handheld tools to basically deposit pigment in a pretty superficial layer. They're kind of injuring or scraping the skin, but they're manually drawing in those hair strokes and putting the pigment into that. Whereas tattooing is using a traditional tattoo device, a tattoo machine, tattoo gun, needle, and they're putting inks that are approved for tattooing down into the brow. And they can do similar hair strokes as well if they want to, or they can do more of a blushing technique where they just kind of basically put a pigment kind of diffusely throughout the brow to make it appear darker.
And we're seeing this used, I think it originally started just as a brow technique to give a thicker brow. And, you know, like, I think it's a little bit entertaining because I think back about, like, you know, especially like when we were in high school or even some time after. We've been out of high school long enough now, I guess trends have came and gone a couple of times. But you think about the thin pencil brow and how people, you know, overplucked. And now all of a sudden we're seeing like the big, thick brows. And so, which I do find attractive, but it's going to be real interesting what's going to happen to this when, you know, the trends change. And we have seen a little bit of that because we were seeing like the real dramatic squared off brows. And that's been a lot of what we've been trying to correct.
And I think, I mean, you made a really good point about this being semi-permanent. And so, you know, as you said, it doesn't really stay in the same state that long, but it doesn't totally go away. So it just fades to a much lighter color. But I've yet to see anyone that's had this, that had it go away totally on its own.
You know, we talked about it going away on its own. Like, even when we do things that to try to get rid of it, it's not an easy process. And it's not a single treatment process either. And I think that people are a little bit undereducated when they start to get permanent makeup. And I'm not saying in every instance, or maybe they're just a little misled by social media or whatever, just like with any of the other aesthetic things that are going on. So I think that it's really important to kind of do your homework before you go out there and start doing these.
So what are some of the things that you do to correct and remove this if it has one arise? So somebody has a brow shape that they don't like, or they decide they want to, you know, change, or if they just want it totally redone, they want to start from scratch. What's the process that somebody has to go through to get that removed before they restart the tattooing or further microblading?
So we do removal for several reasons. Some of them, like trends change, and so that's been some, you know, we've had botch, if you want to call it that, or just a treatment that people weren't satisfied with. I had this one lady, and her brow was actually tattooed beneath the orbital rim, and then when the treatment was revealed to her, she's like, that's way too low, and the lady's like, well, I can fix it for you. So she just tattooed her another brow. So she ended up with three brows. She had her low brow, her real brow, and her freshly tattooed brow. So, you know, they come, and they, a lot of times by the time they get to me, they've tried other techniques that, because a lot of the artists that are putting the brows on, they also have a saline technique that can be used for removal. It's not quite as aggressive as what we can do. What we found the best result with is laser.
Yeah, let me just pause you for a minute there if I can, just because I know a lot of people are listening, and these different lasers out there, I just kind of wanted to go a little bit over all the different ones. So all these lasers, they're not all the same. And some of them are designed to really work on pigment. And so we can use that to treat pigment in your skin. So if somebody has an age spot or a liver spot that they call it, we can use a laser to kind of help erase those. Some of them treat blood vessels. And so the laser that we use can target either dark, the blues, blacks, green. We also have a wavelength we can change it to treat some of the reds, yellows, more orange pigments. And so if you're considering laser tattoo removal, make sure that you talk to your provider about what type of laser they're going to use and what that's meant to treat, because not all lasers will treat all colors of tattoos, and the risks are a little bit different with some of them. So when you talk about using a Q-switch, basically, it's a way that the laser functions. That's not the name of the laser, but it is a type of laser that functions. And we use it, and the one we use is a very, very short pulse duration. So it kind of goes in and explodes the pigment under the skin, but does it in such a short period of time, it doesn't create a lot of heat in that area, because what we're trying to do is get rid of the pigment without causing scarring. And so that's one of the biggest risks of laser tattoo removal is scarring. And I know you do a good job of this, and you do way more of this than I do, actually, in terms of removal and corrective work. But we always talk to the patients about the risk of any scarring. So it's not just, you can take the pigment all the way out, so they end up going from a dark tattoo to an area that's really white or light or discolored, or you can actually have some sort of scarring there, so like a keloid scar. So I think when people think, oh, I'll get a tattoo and I'll just get it lasered off if I don't like it, we really need to start educating them that it may not be as easy as you think to get these tattoos removed, and you may have some side effects as part of that process that really aren't desirable. When you're counseling patients on that, how do you set them up on their treatment plan?
Well, it's much different now than what it was when I first started this, because when I originally started doing, and I'm just saying brow removal because that's what I do the most of, but when I first started, I really thought that I'd be able to do like three or four treatments and, you know, get the result that we wanted. But what I found, probably my second brow, was when I removed it, another brow showed up.
And what do you mean by another brow showed up? They didn't just sprout another brow.
You talked about different wavelengths that are used to remove different colors. And so when I used the wavelength to remove the dark color, then the patient ended up with a peach brow. I didn't realize prior to going into it. We'd done a consultation with her. We got a history on the patient. She told me she had had her brows done a couple of times, but what I didn't realize that she had had corrective work. And so there was a peach brow placed over a peachy color brow that was tattooed over her original brow as a camo. So she had just layers of pigment. And so when I took off the top brow and I thought, wow, this is coming off great. And then all of a sudden she has this peach rosy brow that was there. And thank goodness I had Trinket to use as a resource. And she came in and I was like, what's happened to this brow? And she told me then that that's one of the colors they used to do a camo. So then we had to change and do a different session to remove the peachy color of the ink. And then we had the original brow that was placed. So basically we had three layers of brow and three layers of ink that we had to deal with. And so you never know how a brow is going to respond. And it's also very dependent on the initial art, how the artist put it in, because, you know, microblading is pretty dependent on the depth or the touch of the blade to the skin. So it can be much deeper. And there's some phenomenal, like, microbladers out there. Pensacola, we're very fortunate to have several here. But that's one of the things that's going to kind of dictate, like, how long this treatment's going to take is, have you had previous treatments? Is there scarring? Because scarred tissue doesn't respond the same. And a lot of times these treatments do cause some micro scarring. So scarred tissue is not going to respond the same as a healthy tissue. What type ink was used? I've had, you know, several prison tattoos that we've had to remove, and ash from a burn page in a Bible does not remove the same way as tattoo ink does. So you just never know what you're getting into until you start a treatment.
What I'm hearing you say, though, and what I know that we do in the practice, is you set them up, and this is going to be a process. This is not one time you come in and get a laser and your tattoo is gone. And maybe where you used to do three or four sessions, now you're telling them more like 6 to 10 and we'll see.
Right.
And we know that the laser we have is very effective. So sometimes we get to that result sooner and we don't have to continue those sessions if they get fully the result that they want. But it is something that can take a while. And I think one of the other things that you want to make sure that your provider is experienced with, if they're out there considering who to get to remove their tattoos, is that discussion of the scarring and what they're going to do to minimize those risks. So we know that there's some things that we can do, like not going too aggressive too soon. And so the ink, if it's densely, you know, packed, really dark pigment, we're not going to be able to go as aggressively with that right out of the gate unless we're going to have a higher risk of some, you know, untoward events. And darker skin patients definitely have a higher risk profile. So we know that for our lighter skin patients, you know, very pale skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, that we can be a little bit more aggressive. And even if they get some blistering or an aggressive treatment, they don't typically scar as easy. But if we start getting into more of our, you know, Asians, our Latinos, African descents, and we're too aggressive with it, they're going to have a much higher risk of having pigment problems. So you for sure want to make sure that your provider has a device or a laser that is matched for your skin type and that has experience dealing with tattoo removal, because there can be a lot of these complications associated with it. And so that's for the laser devices. And we do typically kind of clump them all into one category, but for the aesthetic providers that are out there listening to us, not just the patients, we really know that it's a broader class of devices called energy-based devices. So they're not all lasers. And so most recently, you've started using something a little bit different in our practice for some of the brows. You want to talk a little bit about that device?
And actually, it's been really nice because it's a little more precise than the actual laser. It's safe around the eye because it's not using a light-based energy. With a true laser, you can't use it inside of the orbital rim. So you're limited on, like, with the eyeliner and that sort of thing. Like, you really can't use a laser in that area without using some type of protection in the eye. So I've been using the Plexer, and you're a KOL for Plexer. We love them. So you can talk a little more about the device, but it's a plasma-based device. It's very precise. We've had some really, really good results. Like, I just started using this probably within the past 6 months for tattoo removal, and the results I've gotten have actually surprised me even.
Now, do you still set the patients up for the same number of sessions with this, or do you find that it's a little bit quicker or slower than your laser?
I would much rather, like, the patient be surprised that they have to have less sessions. And so, and a lot of times we do use a combination, but of treatments between the laser and the plexor. But I always set the patient up to that it's going to be probably somewhere around 6 to 10 treatments, depending on how they respond.
I think one of the things to me, and you're right. I use the plexor a lot. I talk for them a lot. But I haven't personally performed any tattoo removals with it yet. I've just seen the results of your work, and it is turning out better than I expected. So it's a little bit different. So when you talk about plasma, this is not plasma like blood plasma. And so I think a lot of patients are familiar with PRP or PRF, where we draw their blood, we use a plasma for growth factors. This is actually a little bit different. This is using plasma energy. So plasma is kind of like the fourth state of matter. A lot of our patients have heard us talk about it with our Neogen device, which we use for our non-surgical facelifts. It's a plasma device that we also actually really love in the practice. But the plexor gives us the ability to really focus this down into one tiny little tip so we can be very precise with where we deliver that energy. And it essentially creates a little ablation or a little injury there. And as our body heals it, it comes and it removes. We have some of our cells that will come and also clean up and remove the pigment from that area. And so I thought it would be a pretty slow treatment compared to lasers. And so I've been pleasantly surprised by what you showed me and how quick your patients have responded. And to me, it looks really appealing to do it around areas like the eye, or if somebody gets like a lip liner that's tattooed and it's a little bit out of the lines, or they're not happy with the results, we can be very precise with it. Where some of the other tattoo removal devices, I mean, you can be precise. I don't mean to imply that you can't, but it's not as fine of control as you can get with that plexor device.
You know, the tip of a plexor device that I'm using is basically the size of a ballpoint pen, but I don't want it to be misled that it's superior to the laser treatment, because I don't think that it is. And people still have to understand there's that heal time. So you don't want to continue to re-injure this tissue without allowing it to heal, because then you are like more apt to have a hypertrophic scarring, or, you know, some post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation, run the risk of like, you know, more inflamed tissue. So we always wait somewhere 4 to 6 weeks between treatments. And it's a commitment, because when you start taking someone's brows off of their face, like, you know, they have to consider, like, do they have events coming up, because they can't pencil them in even for
weeks. If they're wounded, yeah.
It's truly wounded skin for a period of a good 7 to 10 days.
Now, I think a lot of people ask, and I don't know if I know your answer to this. In general, do you have to remove the entire brow if they're wanting them just reshaped, or can you selectively remove portions of it?
No, so I work very closely. Like, I can't say enough about Trinket. Like, I feel like we're blessed to have like the brow expert in with us. And so we map out, and most of the time we can remove sections of the brow. But, you know, if someone wants a higher arch, usually we have to remove some of the lower brow so they can get a better arch without being too thick. Or if someone is too heavy in the medial portion of the brow, and we only have to remove that. Or someone's tail is, you know, too low as they age and makes their eye look heavy, then maybe we can only remove that. So we can just remove portions of it, and then she can do corrective work because once they're healed.
So yeah, if they're a little concerned, they have events and stuff, it's not like they have to come in and have everything removed off, and unless it's a totally different color or shape or something.
Right.
Right from, okay.
And we've had those that, you know, the entire brow was placed too low, or the entire brow was placed too high. We had a patient that had, you know, her brows placed 20 years ago and then had a brow lift, and they ended up a little higher than what she liked. And so with that particular patient, what we did was we removed the entire top part of her brow, and then they just worked with the lower part of her brow to build her a new one.
You know, we talk about Trinket because she's in our office, but there's also, like you mentioned, a lot of different professionals in our area. I feel like in Pensacola and kind of our surrounding community, we have a lot of pretty talented aesthetic providers in general.
Yep.
They have great, you know, hair stylists, we have great injectors, we have great makeup artists doing microblading and permanent tattooing. Both of us have had tattooing on our eyeliner, our lash liner. So we did more for like a guy approach. We didn't want to look, we had eyeliner, but we wanted our eyes to pop. And so Trinket was able to do a really thin line on our eyelashes. But we've seen patients who have come in that have attempted to have that from some other providers, where either the skin has got like caught, or they didn't stretch it the way they thought they did. And once the eyeliner is placed, it's not actually on the lash at all. It actually may go up into the lid, or it may be thicker in one area than the others. So have you had much success with removing eyeliner that's been misplaced?
I've removed less eyeliner than I have brows. But it's, I think she calls it, it's where the ink doesn't stay in the place. And it can oftentimes be just because of the inflammation after the healing, and the ink bleeds into surrounding tissue. And I've had a couple of those that we've been able to reduce it. But like being that close to the eye, even with the plexer, makes me a little nervous. So I've certainly had less experience removing eyeliner than brows.
And what are some options that patients have if they have eyeliner that's misplaced and we're not going to be able to use an energy-based device, or you feel it's too close? Do you know of any options that they have to have that corrected?
Yeah, there's saline is an option. And there's, I want to say they're using some TCA combination. Again, we'll have to ask like some of the experts in the field, but TCA is an acid. But basically what the saline does is it encourages the cell to release the ink, and then it's metabolized. And so it does require several sessions, but it's something that's very safe. It's introduced with the tattoo needle, or I guess in a microblade situation, maybe it's microbladed in.
I think that is a good option. I've heard a lot of them doing different sorts of saline dilution for removal. But I also was thinking more about corrective tattooing. You alluded to it a little bit with some of the work that we've been doing, but I've also seen where if you have a really talented makeup artist, they can go on with different color tattoos and actually do skin camo. So they tattoo you more of a skin color in the area where it's smudged to cover that up, which does make it a little more challenging if we ever try to remove all of that. But at least it is an option that they can consider for short term, especially if it's really in an area that we are not able to go with a laser or an energy-based device.
So I had a patient, I don't know if I even told you about this. It was pretty recently, like in the past couple of months, and he came in for a consult for tattoo removal, and he just had like some remnants of a tattoo, but he was scarred pretty badly. And so he, and I read about it after this, but have you heard of salt tattoo removal? So this guy changed branches of the military and had a tattoo that he was going to get rid of and replace. I don't know if it was Marine to Navy or whatever. He was going to replace his tattoo nonetheless. And so they do an abrasion using heavy granules of salt and basically abrade the area to get rid of it. And he was left with like a really significant scar from that. That goes back to like some pretty prehistoric times where they did sand removal and salt removal. So it's something that's like...
Sounds really painful.
It sounds very painful. He said that our way was much more humane. Yeah. It was the craziest thing that I'd ever heard. I've never seen it.
I mean, it's interesting, but I think, you know, again, we can use these methods for tattoo removal all over the body. We talked a lot today about microblading and tattooing because that's what we're seeing pretty frequently in our office, because Trinket again focuses on permanent makeup, and so that's usually what we're dealing with, are some corrective work. Whereas, you know, many times we'll have patients that come in that have tattoos in other places, and because they either Google or they see that we do tattoo removal, then they find us and come in for those procedures as well. I think one of the main things that I really want listeners to take away from this episode is that we all know that people don't take on getting a tattoo lightly, that it's something that they usually put a lot of thought into before they get it. They're confident about their tattoo artist. They're confident about their tattoo design and, you know, where they want to place on their body. But I don't know that people are as cautious about choosing a place for their tattoo removal. So once they decide that it's in the wrong place, they don't like the shape, it changes over time, it's not got as crisp borders, they typically go to anywhere that they see that does tattoo removal. And sometimes we see that includes places that may be using devices that aren't necessarily approved for that use, but that are, it may work in an off-label fashion. And the consumer, the patient, they don't fully understand the risk that they're undertaking by doing that. Because even in trained hands, even using the appropriate devices that are approved for this and skilled hands, we still know that there's a risk for scarring. Are not getting rid of the pigment totally, or now having an even worse aesthetic outcome because now you've kind of gotten rid of most of the tattoo, but not all of it. So I would really like anybody listening to make sure that they take time to interview whoever they're going to go to remove their tattoo as much time as they would interviewing someone to place that tattoo. So as careful as they are in choosing that artist or that design, be just that careful if you get to the point that you need to get that removed.
It takes me as much time to talk to people about the risk of tattoo removal than it does to do the actual removal. Because I think it's very important. Like, I also remove wedding rings is a close second to brows for tattoo removal for me. But I think it's super important to let people know when you start doing something to their face, the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of time and the process, because you're not looking at what's going to be happening in the next 2 weeks. They need to look at the big picture and over the course of the next 6 months. I think it's very important, just like with, you know, any of the facial aesthetic things that we do. We talk about it, I think, probably on nearly every episode of Beauty and the Brain. But it's so important to vet your provider when it comes to, you know, doing any of these tattoo services. Because people will research and do all sorts of things when it comes to getting a tattoo on their arm or their back or all of this, but I don't think they put quite as much time into vetting a permanent makeup artist. So please, please, please take the time to vet the person that's putting on your tattoo, but also take the time to vet us, the person that's going to take your tattoo off.
Well, not just that, but I mean, I know at least from us discussing, we have one or maybe two providers in the area that almost account for 100% of our tattoo removals. We get so many referrals from...
They help to pay for our laser, though.
Yeah, they help pay for our laser. It keeps it operating. Yeah, so vet those providers so they're doing your permanent makeup, just like you would if they're putting a tattoo anywhere else on your body. And we're going to show you some of this corrective work. We're not calling out any providers on this show. Don't send us messages because we're not going to call out names of anybody. But do look at some of the pictures. If you guys are listening to this episode, you can also go and find it on a link to it on YouTube where you can actually see us. And on the YouTube channel, you're going to see some of the tattooing that we've had to correct. And so all the patients that you're going to see that we have corrected that we're going to share pictures have given us permission. We do have that on file. If you guys, we're not just sharing photos randomly here. So they've all given us permission to share their photos. And some of them are pretty drastic. So go over there and look at those if you get a chance. All right, I think we've given you guys a lot of information today about microblading, tattoo removal, tattoo correction, things that you can find in many med spas across the country. We look forward to seeing you again next week on another episode of Beauty and the Brain.
All right, we'll see you soon.